can't wear from
I just want to say, great sign. Please keep
using. Thanks. Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Stretch it out, Carly, and I'll wrap it up.
Okay, so this is our answer. The pop star will call for 10 minutes. So we're going to watch his performance, and then we're going to stop the walk, and then we're going to go inside.
Yeah.
So you good with that?
Yeah.
I was raped, and as it started to come out of me, it's not just the memory that hurt, it was the fact that for 7 years I had let that guy get away with it. I let that guy do that to somebody else. So now I come every time I have a chance. I come out to take back the night, so so we don't let them get away with it anymore. You gotta talk about it. You gotta let somebody know. You gotta make sure people know it happened, and if they don't believe you, tell them again louder. Yeah. Yeah. Woo! It's tough to talk about, I know. Every time I do, my stomach knots up, and if I throw up on this, I'm really sorry. But it happens.
Sorry, it's not mine.
It's not yours. All right, fine. Somebody will be upset. But the most important thing is to keep talking about it. The more light you throw on this, the harder it is to get away. The more you say, the more you accomplish. Keep up the fight, you guys. You guys are doing great. Woo!
I'd like to interject here because most of this event took place inside the First Unitarian Church here in Philadelphia, and because of the very intimate nature of what people were saying, audio recording and video recording, of course, wouldn't be appropriate. So I'm just going to speak a little bit about what took place during this part of the event. So apparently this event has been going on for a long time, but this was my first year attending it, and it was just really, really overwhelming to see how many people have been personally affected by sexual assault and domestic violence. Basically what happened was, after we came inside the church, people took time to come up one by one and stand in front of the group and, you know, speak at the microphone about their own experiences. And some people came up by themselves. Some people came up with a support person who kind of just stood beside them and gave them, you know, some emotional support while they spoke. But people were, you know, really talking about some very, very intimate and very, frankly, very shocking things that had happened to them. And it was very overwhelming. I mean, I'm not a stranger to, you know, what goes on in our society, especially being involved in the alternative media scene. You know, we know what's going on in the world. We're not under any illusions about, you know, human goodness or something like that. But you know, just actually hearing these stories from people's own mouths and just realizing that, wow, these things happen on such a large scale, and they happen to people at such young ages, and it happens within families and with people that you know, your friends. And, you know, later on in during this podcast, the coordinator of this event talks a little bit about why she feels sexual assault and domestic violence are such huge problems. But then when you're sitting there listening to this, you really have to wonder, you know, why does this happen? Like, what is going on in our society? What is wrong with our society? You know, there's something seriously wrong. So on the good side, though, hearing these stories and then seeing that people were, you know, willing to come up and talk about it, and then they talk about their lives now, you know, it really showed me that people are incredibly resilient. You know, you can go through these really like terrible things in your life, but still somehow people manage to rise above that, and they manage to somehow move past it. And I mean, of course you have to live with it every day if something terrible happens to you, but people are resilient. You know, I guess the way our minds work, the way our emotions work, we can, you know, set aside things that have happened to us and move forward and still function as a human being, even though it's difficult. But when I was there, I was kind of tempted to share a story of something that I witnessed, but I didn't want to. Yeah, I felt kind of strange doing it there, but I think I can share it now because, you know, it's a different environment. But this has to do with why I personally care so much about this issue. And, you know, when I was, I think I was about 9 or 10 years old, I was like playing in the street or something, and like a car came past and I didn't see it. And so it kind of hit me, but not really. And I think it just like brushed up against me, but enough to knock me over. And I went to the hospital to get checked out, just to make sure I didn't have like a concussion or any, you know, broken limbs or anything, even though I wasn't really in pain, but, you know, it was just like a precautionary thing. So I was in the emergency room and I was just sitting there with my family at the time. And I remember hearing screaming coming from outside the doors of the hospital. And it was kind of faint at first, but then it started getting louder and louder. And I was like, oh my God, what is that noise? And who is screaming or whatever? And it sounded like a girl. And then a girl was brought in on a stretcher. And I seem to remember her being like they were kind of holding her down or something, because she was like writhing around and like really screaming in such a piercing, awful way that I just have never forgotten it. And for some reason, you know, they kept her on the stretcher in the emergency room, waiting room, for a fairly long period of time. It seemed to go on for like 10 or 15 minutes. And this whole time she was screaming and screaming and screaming and crying without pause. And I remember one of the nurses, she was standing pretty close to me. And she was talking to one of her colleagues, and I don't think I was meant to hear this, but she was talking about how this girl had been brought in before, and this was like her second or third time coming into the emergency room, and that she had been raped by her stepfather. And I was pretty shocked to hear that at the time. And then when I looked at the girl and saw, you know, how distraught she was, and I couldn't even process the fact that something like that could happen. And I kind of vaguely knew what rape meant, but I didn't really, of course, understand until much later how serious it was. And so for me, that left a very, very deep and lasting impression on me. And so yeah, when I was hearing these stories during the event, I was kind of catapulted back to that moment in time when I was a kid witnessing that. But yeah, right now, for the rest of this podcast, I'm going to play some words of Amanda, who actually helped to organize this event. And the first part I'm going to play is a poem that I'm pretty sure she didn't write this poem, but it was written by someone who's a survivor of domestic violence and sexual assault. And I think it's actually two or three poems. And then after that, I was able to catch up to her after the event, and she talks about, you know, her own motivations for wanting to get involved with Take Back the Night, and also what she feels is necessary in order for us to transform our society to make rape, sexual assault, and domestic violence, you know, a thing of the past. So we're going to start by hearing her reciting this poem.
Because I'm trapped in days in a cycle with no end in sight. This is what I get, they say, for being a drug addict. This is what I deserve, they say, for using what my mother raised me with. This is what I get for numbing the pain of the past, palms grasping and groping without permission. My brain doesn't recognize that I'm pinned and my eyes are streaming blankness, but my mind doesn't know that I'm leaving. I remember that we've talked about this. The dizziness and the leaving, the struggling. I try to scream, but I hear nothing. I feel nothing but pressure and heat. And as the eyes continue to leak, I push, but I can't understand why the screams feel so far away. Because I'm fighting and I'm fighting and I'm fighting, and now I'm screaming, and then blackness. Blackness breaks and I overcome the pressure. The adrenaline rushes out one pain to the next, and the moments prior of callous choking violence have become still. I push one last time, and there's a thud. There's blood, mine and his mixed. And I realize that my blade was closer to me than I ever could have dreamed. Part 2 for NP, Malingering Innocence. She once asked me, can it be true that sometimes trauma takes a life as it still lives? Can the patterns and old habits constantly perpetuate and berate beauty's attempts to heal? No matter how many times a clear path is constructed, the way creates finite obstacles only certain eyes and angles can see. Relationships are a blurred gaze and pain-soaked pores. It looks hard to move without feeling the creaking and stretching of heart, the breaking and blistering of her skin, and the attempts to extinguish her existence. Longing for comfort and fearing the same, the ambivalent game that always ends in the wrong place and generally with the wrong way. Muscles ache, limbs ache, brain aches, grasping and gasping and always aching. The lines change, but the play is always the same. Stone Sleep, Part 3. She said that stones were shattering inside her veins, and she could feel the edges catch along her skin as they flowed through. This was her agony, her daily endeavor. 135 days until I'm 18. 135 days until physical freedom. And then healing. And then breathing. And then feeling. Beginning and writing down the progress of each day, 4 hours, 6 hours, 2 hours of sleep each night, we count the hours. We count the hours not interrupted by nightmares, her fear this will never end, her hope to love and be loved without strings, without walls, without stones shattering skin. We count the hours. Night terrors seep through walls, screaming, dreaming of not hearing his voice and his touch. 2, 4, 1, done, bleeding, beating, breathing. We count the hours. The horror that is bothered by traditional inequities, no resolution for problems outside the box or house, flames burning flesh to bone to bleed to fail, and the fear of not leaving, of believing this too will not pass. At last, the hours. We count the hours. We count the hours she sleeps. 1 panic attack, 2 flashbacks, 4 hours, imprieved weakness. Bleak outcomes pushing against the meters that have no diagnostic or prescription to fix this, a community mesmerized by the lies and the pain and the potential for stones passing unhinged by hours. We count the hours. And I also just wanted to say something that Erica and both Nicole brought up earlier about the importance of community and the importance of talking and sharing stories and about bringing this out into places where it usually isn't. Because it's really uncomfortable. Like, it's really nerve-wracking, and it's really uncomfortable, and I've been doing this for 12 years, and anyone who knows me, I'm very outgoing, and like, I'm shaking. Even though I'm like one of the most outgoing people in the world, and I've been doing this for 12 years, and I'm shaking. Because it's really difficult. And it's really uncomfortable. But the more you do it, the easier it is, and the less it happens, and the better we all are for being able to know that we're stronger together than we are when we're silent, and we're stronger together than we are when we're hiding. So I just want to thank everyone for coming out, especially those of you who have never been here before, because I hope that you bring this with you into your homes and into your lives and into your stories so that you can keep finding people who are healing and who need support, and we can keep this going. And someone else said that this should be like monthly. I'd totally get down on that with you if you want to organize that. We could do this monthly. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, so I'm speaking with Amanda, who is the organizer for Take Back the Night. And Amanda, just tell me like how long you've been organizing this event and what it is and what it means to you and all that good stuff.
Sure. So I started organizing this event 12 years ago in North Jersey. And when I moved to Philly, I found out that they did not have a citywide Take Back the Night here. It only happened at colleges. So I started, myself and 4 other women started organizing it in Philly 3 years ago in 2011. And what it means to me, it's kind of a compilation of everything. It means everything. It's the different types of energy and people that would not normally collide that come to this event, the healing and the therapy behind it, the underlying tones of confronting rape culture and confronting oppression in general, the kind of overall acceptance and dropping of judgment and safe space that is created that doesn't really exist anywhere else that I like know. Like in my organizing circles and in my life, like we create what we call like safer spaces. But this is a place where, and you heard many people talk about it, like it literally is a safe space. Like you can use that word without adding the R. And I don't think that exists anywhere else besides these events. So it's a lot. It's all different types of things.
Okay. And we heard people, you know, talking about really personal traumatic things, and some people were getting really emotional. Is there, like, what organizations are here to, like, follow up with people in case they need, like, further, you know, mental health assistance or counseling or something? Like, what other organizations are also here?
Yeah. So two of the organizations that are more associated with mental health are Women Organized Against Rape and Women Against Abuse. They were both head representatives here. And then we also had trauma counselors from Jefferson Hospital and from other community organizations throughout Philly. Like myself, for example, I'm a trauma counselor. We had two other women who were doing support work.
And so there's been a lot in the media recently. You know, rape has been a really, it's coming more to the forefront. Stuff in India, Steubenville, and we have events like this where it's sort of like therapeutic and people talk about, you know, what they've been through. But what do you think is really going to take to change this culture that we're living in, you know? And some people have a lot of different ideas about what that might look like and what kind of structural changes might have to happen in society. But what do you think is going to have to really happen to change, you know, the underlying problems in society that are like causing the rape crisis?
So I think a lot of things, but a few things that come to mind. Some people spoke about taking these types of events and this type of dialogue and jargon and like making these types of issues less taboo, taking them out into the streets, taking them into places where it's uncomfortable for people to talk about it, getting it to become less taboo to talk about rape and sexual violence. In addition to that, when these types of situations come up where there is a perpetrator that is identified, specifically in the media, but also in our own community, having the strength and the energy and the courage and the community to confront that person on their actions and to talk about not only why they felt like it was okay for them to perpetrate that action, but what kind of a history, like what was their narrative that they were raised in and what was the narrative that allowed the community to not speak out again immediately. So things like that are really important. Having people who are willing to be confronting allies immediately, like when it happens. And then on a more macro level, trying to, I actually was just on a victim blaming panel back in March about sexual violence and victim blaming, and something we talked a lot about is consent education. That like consent education that is absent from general dialogues, it's absent from even like people like us that are very involved in these types of situations, like rape crisis centers and domestic violence awareness. There's not a lot of consent education that goes on.
Like, definitely in the media is like nothing about it.
At all.
Yeah.
And so holding reporters accountable for using words like alleged, right? So these are things like confronting the kind of jargon that is used, confronting the kind of narrative that is told in the media, the narrative that is told in schools, like the idea that there are lots of the fact that abstinence only is still something that's accepted in like 24 states in this country, right?
Yeah.
Like it's insane.
It's crazy.
And it's something that doesn't work, and it's something that we know doesn't work, and it's something that reinforces that if we ignore something, then it'll go away or it doesn't exist, which we all know just makes everything worse. And so I think consent education is a huge thing that we can start. So you've got like the micro level, which is, and the more intimate level, which is having these conversations on a daily basis when they come up. You've got like the more meso level, which is the entire community confronting this situation when it happens on the spot and talking about not only why the action was allowed to happen, but what was the narrative that allowed the community to watch it and not confront it earlier. Because there are always behaviors that we see in people that we kind of ignore before, like, you know, an egregious thing happens. And then the macro is more like in terms of policy and in terms of like education is talking about consent from an early age. Talking about, there's a lot of articles that came out specifically after Steubenville about teaching little kids how to respect each other's space and bodies and how to talk, like, do you want a hug from me? Is it okay if I play with you? Is it okay if I sit next to you? Like, these things seem really commonplace and silly to people who aren't in these kind of aggressive mind states, but also the fact that there's tons and tons of influences that are coming into little kids' minds, just like thinking that you as the parent is the only one that's going to be affecting them is just silly.
It is.
So there's lots of things to do. And I really liked one of the women that stood up who was an organizer with Slutwalk talked about being very intentional and almost theatrical about putting things on your walls, putting art on your walls, putting just like writing in your bathroom, like, you know, have you talked to a rapist today or whatever, right? Like things that make that kind of jar people but make them think about,
it,
that this is something that happens on a secondly basis, right?
Yeah.
Combining the statistics of military sexual trauma, civilian trauma and domestic violence, you have a female-bodied person, not even talking about males, not even talking about transgender peoples, but which then obviously exponentially increases the numbers, but on a every 7 seconds, there's some kind of violence being perpetrated against a female. So it's constant, and yet we talk about it in these vacuums. So I think pushing that boundary and pushing that barrier and pushing the narrative that this is something that's happening on a constant basis, so we should be talking about it and confronting it and making it less taboo on a constant basis.
Okay, thanks Amanda, that was great.
Yeah. Thanks you. So much, Ron.
Girl, you are rich, even with nothing. And you know tenderness comes from pain. It's amazing how you love. Love is kind. It's down rugged road you've come. Though you had every reason, you didn't come undone. Somehow you made it to the other side. You didn't suffer in vain. You forgive those who have trespassed against you. Through.